Ask the Experts weekend continues with a conversation. To ask a question, give us a call at 340-1045. Here are your hosts, Jay Gray and Dr. Ali Kazrayan.
Good afternoon. I am Jay Gray, joined here by Dr. Ali Kazrayan. Actually, the show open is accurate for once again because I'm back in filling in
Absolutely.
For Danielle today.
It's like the old school game.
Exactly.
We brought our old uniforms out.
Very
today.
Old school. And I'm sitting in here with two rivals, a Florida fan and an Alabama fan right now while the game's going on. So things could get a little interesting today.
I'll tell you, for about 30 seconds, it looked very good for Florida.
Not so much at the moment, but they're holding their own. So I'm surprised that they're this close to begin with. But you know what? You never know what's going to happen.
Should we ask you what your prediction is?
I thought Alabama was going to be up a lot more than they are right now. So you probably don't want to hear my prediction being a Florida fan and all. But, you know, today we've got a great show. So if you want to call in, 340-1045. And Dr. Ali, right before we started, you were telling me maybe a little bit of history being made here today.
Yeah, so today we were very excited. So we were... Earlier today, we had the first prostate cancer run in the region that we partnered with Zero Cancer to do. And that was a very grammatically incorrect sentence, but it was because I'm so excited about what we did today. Zero Prostate Cancer is an organization that is dedicated to, again, their mission is simply to end prostate cancer, which is a tall undertaking. But one of the ways that they do it is they go into communities and we create awareness events, one of which is a run walk. That's the biggest thing that they do in multiple communities. And we had a 5K run. We had a 1 mile kind of fun walk and a kids superhero dash. And it was a great event. We had a large number of people show up. We had a large number of survivors show up to celebrate survivorship, and also people that had recently and over the not so recent past lost loved ones to prostate cancer. And so we celebrated their lives. And we talked about the importance of raising awareness for prostate cancer, a disease that affects 1 in 7 people in their lives. And fortunately, when caught early, has an incredibly successful success rate. 2.5 million men live with prostate cancer. So typically, this is a disease that people live with, they don't die of. However, the world of prostate cancer has been plagued with controversy of whether or not to screen, what to do once you get diagnosed, how to follow the disease if you are diagnosed and you follow a variety of different treatments. So it's one that is not necessarily the easiest one for people to know what to do, whether you are a patient, whether you are a primary care physician. Even the world of urology is not necessarily moving in direction with crystal clear pictures. And the world of medicine and the world of prostate cancer is changing at a blazing pace. My guest today to discuss this is a dear friend of mine, and I'm very excited that over the past year, I'd say, we've become closer friends and our mission to raise awareness for prostate cancer, raise awareness for a very incredible treatment modality called HIFU, high intensity focused ultrasound, which uses sound waves and ultrasound to do to ablate prostate tissue for a more focal therapy. You can treat the whole prostate, and this is a segue for people who have disease that may not necessarily be as minimal in volume or aggressivity that warrants active surveillance where you just monitor it. But it may not necessarily be the disease that you have to undergo a radical prostatectomy or external beam radiation therapy. So it allows us to change the paradigm of that plagued controversy of overdiagnosis, which truly has overshadowed this discussion, where we can break that. Not every prostate cancer that's diagnosed necessarily needs to be treated. And if it does need to be treated, we don't necessarily have to have the prostatectomy or the radiation therapy. And again, I speak of this as a prostatectomist. That's what my fellowship training is in minimally invasive surgery for prostate cancer. So Cleet Walker is joining us. He is the Lord and President, CEO, owner of Vitura Health, which is a company that has dedicated itself to men's health awareness. And the process of maintaining men's health, and one factor of that has been the introduction of one modality of treatment of prostate cancer, which is HIFU and high intensity focused ultrasound, with a grand focus in educating the not only the public of this as a treatment, but also the practitioners and the urologists that are treating this with HIFU. Dr. Steven Cianti, who's been a guest of the show before, is a medical director at Vitura, and And I'm very fortunate to be a part of this organization where our focus is education and making sure the right patient gets the right treatment by the right surgeon who knows how to perform this very elegant operation. Cleet, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm very excited to be here, actually. And the prostate cancer run this morning was fantastic, and it was great to see all the folks out, and especially the survivors, and raising more awareness for prostate cancer. And we have also a national sponsorship with Zero, which has been very good this year. We've attended lots of races. They have about 40 around the country. So we attended about 25% of those, and then we supported the rest of them, but we wouldn't have missed this one for anything in the world.
Well, we feel very honored that you were here, and you actually won in your age group, which was, what, 79 and over?
Yeah, well, there was only one participant, and that was me, so I had to win. So
actually not that old. probably closer to my age group. So let me ask you, and we'll kind of answer this question and backtrack to how all this got started for you, but why did you guys decide to partner as a national partner with Zero Cancer, the Vitura organization?
Absolutely. So obviously, when we first started as a startup company, we've been in business now for 14 months, and we needed to get our name out there. We wanted to create a brand, and we looked around the country, and Zero was a lot like what I would consider the Susan G. Komen of breast cancer awareness and their run races. And I thought that had been very successful. And so we looked to Zero. We talked to them. We felt like it was a good partnership. They're trying to create a lot of awareness. They have a lot of patients. They have a lot of patient advocacy programs. They have a lot of government relation programs and scholarship programs, and we just felt like it was a very good partnership that we could would allow us to be seen throughout the country and allow us to create more awareness for prostate cancer, because I do believe that, prostate cancer today is kind of where breast cancer was 10 or 15 years ago, and we're starting to see more and more awareness and more discussion about it, and that's what we want to see.
So since we first met, awareness of healthcare in general, and specifically men's health awareness, has been something that you have discussed as a driving force for most of what you do in the healthcare field, and a driving force as a mission for Vitura Health. Prostate cancer and HIFU being one component of that in your long-term vision for Vitura Health. How did this start?
Great question. So, I've been around healthcare a long time, probably since the early 90s. And my father had prostate cancer in 2001. Obviously, I'm a male, not quite 79 years old yet.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Not quite 79 years old yet, but I am reaching that age where there are a lot of male issues. As I learned about high-intensity focused ultrasound, I also did a lot of research around men's health in general. Again, being a guy's guy and being around a lot of men, I know that we don't like to talk about healthcare. We don't like to talk about our health. We don't like to talk to other people about our health. We want to avoid discussions in general. And when I saw that this was an opportunity to not only bring a new technology to the healthcare community, but also provide men with a resource that could be their advocates and their call center. We have nurses that they can talk to and they can ask questions. And really, men's health, there's lots of women's centers. You don't see a lot of men's centers out there. And we think that's because, we know that's because men just don't, we don't take good care of ourselves, and but we need to, and our loved ones want us to. So we wanted to provide a resource for that to happen. And after going through prostate cancer with my father in 2001 and seeing kind of the outcome and the confusion around treatment and what was available and how we went through the process and you ask the question to 10 different people, you get 10 different answers. And so it became a real passion. And I've been around a lot of startup companies. I've been around a lot of healthcare companies, and I've never been more passionate about a business in my life. This is a, you know, I wake up every day knowing that we're doing great work for men. I get, you know, we're literally curing cancer at times, and I get, you know, lots of texts and messages from patients, and I talk to all of our patients on a pretty regular basis, and it really excites me. So part of it was probably because of my experience in healthcare, but part of it was my father.
So let me ask you this. Being someone who went with your father to discuss options, to discuss with him afterwards what to do, and as you kind of see, healthcare is always in the news in terms of something that has to do, whether it's healthcare policy, whether it's healthcare economics, whether it's the way discussions about various different diseases come into place, pharmaceuticals. It's always in the place where there's a confusion or a concern regarding how healthcare is delivered. As a non-physician who is dealing with discussions with both patients and physicians and technology and this whole circle of healthcare delivery, what do you think is the is, and I mean, you can't answer this in one thing, but what is the crux of the problem that begins this whole pyramid of problems below just falling apart? Why have we gotten here?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and you know, it's you know, as my background in healthcare, and I see this consistently. I think we, number one, technologies. You know, we as a country and the insurance industry and what we do and how we view medical technology is so different than how we view iPads and iPhones. You know, everybody goes out and buys the latest and greatest iPhone, and nobody has a computer that's over a year or two old. But yet we want to wait 10 years for a medical technology to prove out data before we recommend it to a patient who might could take advantage of that particular technology. And we've got to get better at that. I mean, we've got to get better at accepting things and offering it to our patients through it. Don't get me wrong. Things have to be tested. They have to be, we have to know that they do what they say they'll do. But I think we've got to find a way to shorten that time period and that acceptance. You know, HIFU, of course, isn't covered by insurance and may not be for several years. And that can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing, right? I mean, it's a good thing for the companies because we have to find a way to pay for the technology, but it's a bad thing for patients who have to come out of pocket to pay for it. And so that's just one example of how we've gotten here. We don't do the technology the way we probably should do it.
And I think one of the challenges that is the balance of safety with innovation. And in Europe, things potentially move from idea to from idea in the bench to the bedside a little bit quicker. However, in the United States, we put a lot more effort into making sure things are safe and they're not going to hurt people. However, that comes at a cost that we lag behind. For example, with high-intensity focused ultrasound, Europeans have 20-year data that they have that they can bank on at the U.S. FDA doesn't look at. FDA needs U.S. data to look at from that standpoint. So it allows us a little bit of a challenge from that standpoint. So when we come back, we kind of will continue to having this discussion of how to take the idea of innovation to the bedside and how to do that from both the business standpoint and the physician standpoint and how to make the patients' lives better, all in the discussion of prostate cancer awareness, which is the theme for today.
If you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call, 340-1045. That's the number to call in. Going to take a short break. Come back here, talk more on the conversation on News 104.5 WOKV. Conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. Thanks for joining us. If you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call, 340-1045.
Welcome to the conversation. Today we are talking about prostate cancer awareness, and my guest in studio is Cleet Walker, who is the president and CEO of Vituro Health and a national sponsor of Zero Prostate Cancer, an organization that is committed to ending prostate cancer. It's a non-for-profit, and they actually do run walks throughout the country, and we're very proud to have partnered with them to do the first prostate cancer-focused run here in the Jacksonville, North Florida area ever, and it's our inaugural, hopefully annual run. We did it this morning, and it was a wonderfully heartwarming, successful event, and we had survivors, we had families of survivors, we had people that just came out to support prostate cancer, and we raised close to $50,000. A significant amount of that will actually return to the Jacksonville community, in addition to the amazing things that the Zero Prostate Cancer Organization does to forward their mission to end prostate cancer. So before the break, we were talking about one of the challenges that Cleet, as an entrepreneur and someone who has look to innovate the delivery of a novel technology to patients dealing with prostate cancer, looking at how technology is advanced in the United States. And one of the challenges was it takes a long time before the confidence of the FDA and our community and people that talk about different things is to a point where you can begin recommending treatments for a patient. And the positive of that is that we make sure that things work, we make sure that they are safe, and make sure that the balance of the risk benefits favors the benefit. The negative of it is that we lag behind potentially the same way that if we had an iPhone, by the time that 2025 rolled around, the iPhone would probably be obsolete. The same way that if the flip phone was now being introduced, it may be a potential problem. One thing that I find interesting as a statistic the first time I heard it, I found amazingly interesting. The volume of medical knowledge in 1950 was predicted to double, and it doubled every 50 years. So the amount of things that we learned. In 1980, it was 7 years. And in 2010, it was 3.5 years, meaning that the amount of information that we had in medicine, every 3.5 years, we would double that breadth of information. A lot of that come from, now we know everything there is to know about our DNA. We can do things with it. You know, I have stem cell research. The innovation in technology and being able to apply that into diagnosis and treatment is mind-boggling. By 2020, which is not too far away, they predict that the volume of medical knowledge will double every 73 days. Huh. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
So to be able to keep up with that and the advances in technology that you see in other arenas, those things are happening in medicine as well. So to see how that is going to move forward is amazing, and how medicine is going to keep up and how entrepreneurial innovation is going to keep up to deliver that is going to be an interesting question. And how do you see that is going to happen in the current system that we have towards delivering new technology to the masses?
Well, it's one of those things where I think, and what you're seeing, I think one of the interesting statistics that when we looked at starting at Vituro Health, was concierge medicine. And it's a little bit of a broad definition, but concierge medicine, I'm not really including plastic surgery and elective surgery, but more people choosing to pay to have access to a physician. And if you look at the way money was spent, so in 2010, there was about $800 million in cash that was spent in the U.S. for concierge medicine and the way they defined it. And that's most of that was primary care. So that's most of your primary care doctors who took on a panel of people, and they paid a certain amount of money per year to go to these concierge doctors. And I belong to a concierge physician as well. In 2016, that number is closer to, based on statistics, you know, with 14, I know what it is, but 2016 is probably close to $8 billion. So what happens is people are spending their own money to have access to things that are innovative. They're spending money to go overseas. They're spending money to get access to physicians, to spend more time with their doctor. If you look at what we talk to a lot of our patients about, and even Forbes wrote an article in the last month about prostate cancer, and they said that prostate cancer patients that spend time with their physician like they do their financial analyst talking about their future. Because even in our research, we found that doctors, once they diagnose prostate cancer, this is the whole over-treatment discussion, that the amount of time spent with a patient was really not good. It was, you know, less than 5 minutes in some discussions of from you have prostate cancer to we're going to fix it, and not quality of life, not discussions. And so I think people are willing to spend money. And so I think one solution for some of the medical technology, and some, you know, patients are more educated with the internet, with technology. Patients are, you know, we are all more educated. So we go to our physician more educated. And I think if physicians don't really adapt to that and understand that their patients are coming in more educated, and they're not going to just say, you know, they're not just going to take physicians' direct word for everything. They're going to challenge them. I think we as consumers, we as men and women and children, but consumers, we should challenge our physicians, because we all know that, you know, not every physician's a great physician. Not every physician does things the way that we think they should. Some, and they're human, right? So we're all human, and we do what we know best.
And so with that, the thing that we'll talk about coming back is, how do you balance finding the right doctor for you to get the right treatment at the right time, and how do you begin the conversation of when to do all that?
340-1045, that's the number to call in if you want to join in the conversation. Going to get an update from Fox News and a look at the rest of your weekend forecast for the Jags game. This is News 1045, WKD.
Ask the Experts Weekend continues with a conversation. To ask a question, give us a call at 340-1045. Here are your hosts, Jay Gray and Dr. Ali Kezrayan.
Welcome back to the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. Thanks for joining us. If you want to join in on the conversation, we're talking all about prostate cancer today, 340-1045. And Dr. Ali, I'm sure you'd say one of the biggest problems is that people don't get screened. Why do you think that is? Is that out of fear? Is that out of just not being educated about the disease?
Well, I'll tell you, there's controversy. So prostate cancer screening, way back when, and sadly, it the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations against prostate cancer screening came out in 2012, and I know we mentioned a lot in the show, but I'll revamp. In that year, they made final recommendations that they believe the harms of screening with a PSA test, and they didn't really comment too much, but the digital rectal exam, just essentially prostate cancer screening, the harms of screening outweighed the benefits, really falling on the realms of this idea of over-treatment and over-diagnosis. And meaning you diagnose a prostate cancer, everyone who's diagnosed gets treated, and they potentially have side effects associated with the treatment for cancers that may not harm them. Again, going back to an analogy that I always use, there are four types of prostate cancer. There are rockets, rabbits, turtles, and snails. Rockets are prostate cancers that are metastatic and out of your prostate when it's diagnosed. Really and truly, the reason we screen for prostate cancer is to avoid that cancer. Because right now, even in 2016, we don't have a treatment for it. We can contain it. We can try to prolong the inevitable, but it can cause death, and it's a painful death. It gets in the bone and things of that nature. Rabbits are prostate cancers that are confined to the prostate that have the potential of getting out of the prostate. So if we find them early enough while they're confined to the prostate, we can potentially offer a treatment so that by curing the cancer, doing something to keep it from getting out of the prostate, we have eliminated that possibility as best we can. And you know, prostate cancer confined to the prostate when it's treated, especially lower risk, low volume cancers, have a very good, better than 90% cure rate. Then you have the turtles and the snails, slow growing, slow moving cancers that may or may not ever impact the long-term survival of someone who is diagnosed with that cancer. And historically, 90% or more of those cancers were treated. And so that's where all the controversy and the dilemma stands up. So if you're someone who hears your prostate cancer is not going to kill you, more people live with prostate cancer than they die, which is true. You know, they've done autopsy studies of people in their hundreds, between 50 to 70, 80%. When they do autopsy studies, they find prostate cancer in their prostate that may or may not have killed them. You may think, you know, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force says this, my primary care doctor's not doing a rectal exam, he's not checking a PSA, this may not be important. The other thing is, let's say the three of us go see our doctor. we probably don't know every lab that has just clicked on to their check. You go see your doctor every year, they get a bunch of labs, they say, you know, Jay, you're doing great. Thank you very much. And if you and I spoke a week later, you know, what labs did they check? You don't know. You know, I'm a physician. I can't recount every single lab my physician checks on me. I have a general idea, and I ask him stuff and things of that nature. So if that same physician who in the past was checking a PSA and now all of a sudden stopped, you'd never know. And so men are not as good at asking about that stuff. So you don't go to the doctor as often. You're not getting your regular checkups. You're not doing those things. So if you don't know, that's very important. There are two populations where that not knowing and not asking and not getting screened becomes even more important, and that's men with a family history of prostate cancer and African-American men. Those men have a higher risk of getting prostate cancer. And a lot of times if they're diagnosed with prostate cancer, it may be more aggressive and could potentially be more fatal. And so that's the controversy of prostate cancer. And one of the things that the American Urological Association, in concert with some of the politicians we have up in Washington, they recently, actually in the week past, a physician, Dr. John Lynch, who's a prominent urologist as well as being himself a prostate cancer survivor, they testified before Congress on behalf of the American Urological Association, discussing the importance of a bill that wants to increase the transparency and also the accountability of that U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, that organization that made those recommendations. And their discussions included and highlighted basically four key reforms. Inclusion of specialists in the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Currently, there are no specialists. They thought that it would unduly influence the recommendation. So if you're talking about breast cancer, if you had breast cancer specialists and breast cancer experts in the world of medical oncology, they would say treat people because they want to treat people so that we can all drive, you know, Bentleys and buy new yachts from all the treatments that we do. And that's not the case. And that's one thing that we emphasize on the show over and over again. When people and physicians and specialists come up with guidelines, it's not driven by that. And so this was key, inclusion of specialists in the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Second was an accountable and transparent process for recommendations so that before no one knew how they came up with these recommendations. It was like pulling teeth to find out how they did it. Now we want the process to be accountable. The other one was establishment of an advisory board to ensure regular input for stakeholders. And by stakeholders, like patients, the physicians, to make sure that we're constantly looking because medicine changes. Again, going back in 2020, every 73 days, our information is going to change. And the last part was a process of to request a review of the previous recommendation in the presence of additional peer-reviewed scientific evidence. And that's something you were talking about. If we get new evidence, is there a possibility of revisiting something? If we get some breakthrough, amazing new study or technology, can we go back and say, hey, can we reintroduce that? And so I think this is something that our audience and everyone should be aware that's being discussed in Washington. And it's important for us to know that these things can impact recommendations, and your primary care physician may not be checking a PSA, so it's important for you to talk to them. And I personally think 45 years of age is a great place to start if you have a family history of prostate cancer, if you're African-American, somewhere in your 40s and 50s. And if anyone ever wants to talk about the studies, why they are, feel free to call our show, 340-1045. I hope that's correct, Jake.
Yeah, you got it.
You always correct me.
You're
when
a pro. You've been in this a while now.
Last time he was here, I made a mistake.
can I say Roll Tide real quick? Just we just scored. I just wanted you to know.
Might upset the audience a little bit.
Honestly, the problem with this is and maybe we'll put a camera in the studio so you guys can see where I'm located. I can't see a television. Where these two are located, they're watching the television back. They're looking at the game, and every time we go to break, I look back. We're a lot further behind, unfortunately, and I don't know how that happened, but congratulations.
That's all right. I rubbed it in. I'm sorry.
And for me, it's very difficult because between 1992 and 2007, when I was actually at the University of Florida, we pretty much won everything. And it's very challenging over the past, sadly to say, the decade. The Jaguars, you know, I love the Jaguars, but victory has not been the precedent set before us.
Rough decade or so.
The Gators are not also glimmering with hopes of victorious precedent every week. It's a difficult time.
Well, they have a good coach now. I think their coach is going to change that.
So we'll try to have a good time. So anyway, back to our discussions. I hope that kind of sort of answered the question. I don't think it's necessarily patients are afraid of getting screened, which that is a big key. Patients are very worried about getting rectal exams. That would, you know, again, I'm 42. These are the years to begin thinking about that. And unfortunately for me, one strong consideration point is my father's a urologist. Is he the one to do the rectal exam? I can't explain to you how awful a thought this is. If not, who else? I know all of the urologists, and I mean, all of this becomes layers of horrible thought, but it's important to do. So some people say just get a PSA test, and a lot of people recommend that. I personally think that you can have, and the studies show you can get prostate cancer with a low PSA, and have a normal rectal exam. You can have a low PSA and an abnormal rectal exam and get prostate cancer. And the studies show that you would be okay. You know, the PSA alone is a stronger argument, but most of those studies put a caveat in that they make those recommendations to some degree because they know people are afraid of doing the rectal. It takes a few minutes. It is not the most uncomfortable test known. Again, it's not something that, you know, the amusement park ride or anything like that, but it's not a very uncomfortable test. We, as urologists and primary care physicians, do not plan and hope, you know, we don't try to make it uncomfortable, but it does give you a lot of information, and it allows you sometimes to catch cancers that the PSA alone may miss. So I personally believe the two together is a more important way to screen for prostate cancer. And again, all of us who treat prostate cancer a great deal have patients in their 40s and in their early 50s that have prostate cancers. And for me, it just happens the past 6 weeks or so, the amount of operations I've done in people in their 40s and 50s has been very impressively large in terms of volume. And so I always think, I always actually get sad when I diagnose patients in those ages. And my father brings this home for me in a very wonderful way that always cheers me up. He says, you know, why are you sad? Those are the guys whose lives you actually save by diagnosing them early, because those are the guys whose disease is impactful if you leave it alone. And so if you kind of look at some of the recommendations, 50, 55, if those guys waited until those ages, they probably wouldn't be alive because their cancer would be metastatic. So there's early PSA study after study shows that it's the most predictive of your personal prostate cancer risk. And if you have a family history or if you're African-American, a PSA in your early 40s is of the utmost importance to make sure that you know your baseline risk. And you can actually, you know, there's studies that actually show and groups that actually do personalized algorithm-based screening protocols based on what that first PSA is.
Absolutely. You know, that's another reason why Vitero Health, we offer a program. We actually offer a program. Someone could call us off the internet, actually, ViteroHealth.com, and they can actually become a patient who we would manage their prostate cancer from start to finish. Or even if they have a family history, we could start the screening process. We help them get screened. We help them find their proper screening. Then we can track that patient through their lives, and it's a very small fee to pay. It's a cash fee, but it's very small to have someone that helps you manage it. We did a lot of research on the PSA testing realm, and we found that obviously men are, again, there's not a lot of symptoms of prostate cancer. So when we don't feel bad, we don't want to be tested because we don't. We feel okay, then there should be nothing wrong, but that's really a bad way to look at it. And what I've learned about prostate cancer is that you don't have a lot of symptoms.
More than 90% are completely asymptomatic. And those symptoms that you read about that are associated with prostate cancer tend to be lumped in with similar symptoms you'd have for just a prostate being enlarged, for a thing called BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia. Enlarged prostate causes urinary symptoms, slow stream, going more frequently, things of that nature. If you have blood in your urine, it's a urological emergency. You have to make sure you get evaluated. But the thing we're thinking in the top of our mind is bladder cancer, not prostate cancer.
Right.
From that standpoint.
Yeah. And so, you know, we just think that, you know, and also I think that men that were younger, especially if you were diagnosed with prostate cancer, that's why you have so many men that are on active surveillance today or watchful waiting, which is a interesting name because not many people actively surveil it, which is one of the services that we provide.
Which is a key thing for active surveillance, right, is you have to keep up with it.
Right, and that's something at Vitro Health we help people do. We actually surveil that for them, and we remind them, and we make sure they get their treatments.
So you help them navigate their disease.
We help them navigate their disease, absolutely. And we give them resources of people to talk to, good doctors like Dr. Kezrian here in Jacksonville. We have groups, 10 partnerships around the country. So we have lots of places we can send, and that's growing. And but we also found that men, you know, prostate cancer, nobody wanted to have surgery. You know, people are scared of surgery. People are scared of the outcomes of surgery, even though that, surgeons are fantastic, and there's a lot of good reason to have surgery. There's a lot of good reason to have other options. But, you know, one of the reasons I fell in love with HIFU as a treatment for men is that it is a it's non-invasive. It's, you know, you're back to work in a very short period of time. It has some very good efficacy around it for curing the disease. And the best for me is that the side effects are so minimal if done by a properly trained doctor.
That's the key with HIFU. If you kind of look at the various different treatment options, we can monitor, and about 40-45% of prostate cancers that are low volume, low risk can be monitored with active surveillance. And then you have the cancers that are those rabbits that are more aggressive, that may become something that you have to keep in mind, radical therapies like a radical prostatectomy or radiation therapy options. But you do have a lot of cancers that are in between that may not necessarily need immediate radical therapy, and something ablative like HIFU or a focal therapy is something that can be discussed. And if your urologist doesn't perform those things, find a urologist that does, because it needs to be in the spectrum of discussion at least. You need to talk. If you have prostate cancer, think about second opinions and talking to people that do have a wide breadth of knowledge about all the treatment options that are available. And that's the key to think about with prostate cancer, personalizing your therapy and your discussions from start with the discussion of whether to screen or not. That's important. And if you don't have a proper explanation of why you should screen or why you shouldn't screen, make sure you find someone that does. And when you talk, if you're diagnosed and you're talking about the therapeutic things that are available, make sure those options are discussed to you by someone that knows all of them and knows all of them well.
340-1045. We're wrapping up the conversation here. One segment left. If you want to get that last second phone call in, give us a call, 340-1045. Coming right back here on News 1045 WOKV. Welcome back to the conversation here on News 1045 WOKV. We're going to head to the phones and see what this guy's got to say. How you doing today?
Doing great. I just wanted to say I was so happy to be a part of the Zero Prostate Cancer Walk Run today. And Dr. Kezrian and all your sponsors, thank you so much for bringing even more awareness to prostate cancer. I think every cancer is very, very important, but I think prostate cancer for us men, you know, it's like on the bottom of the totem pole. And I think by generating even more awareness, we are going to eventually find a cure.
Well, thank you very much. You know, that's why I think doing things like this is important. Prostate cancer awareness is something that is 1 in 7 men get prostate cancer in their life, and we don't talk about men's health enough. And then, Cleet, you were mentioning this before.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and any parting words? And Scott, thank you for the call. Any parting words as we end our final segment of the Cleet Walker Show?
Well, I appreciate you having me here, and it was a great event today. And prostate cancer awareness, finding the right physician that'll talk and talk about your quality of life and spend time with you. Doctors like Dr. Kezrian, I mean, our partners at Vitero Health are doctors that spend time with their patients and definitely need to find the right physician that has the right experience. And that's probably my main suggestion to all patients out there. And get tested.
And anything from you, Jay?
It's great to be back. It was nice.
This was nice. What have you been doing in there?
Same old, you know, just lifting weights and living the dream.
Again, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lori, and our staff. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for my dad for allowing me the opportunity to do these things and my family. And thank you for my mom, who's a breast cancer specialist, for through her career allowing me to watch how The world of breast cancer matured into personalizing healthcare to the patient of whom the cancer is one component. And it's very exciting to see prostate cancer beginning to catch up and beginning to move at exponentially rising paces. As we see, by 2020, the breadth of medical knowledge will double in 73 days. And it's very exciting to have to keep up with that pace.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation. Back again next week. Coming up, an update from Fox News and the rest of your weekend forecast here on News 1045 WOKV.